Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 42, section 11, which is old single column, page 481. All right, don't need very much intro, just recall the basic idea of the previous section. So they had that very succinct overview of the hierarchy of mind energy. The rest of the paper is basically continuing in that mode of reminding us of the full nature of the title of this paper. It's not just energy, M-dash matter, it's mind and matter. And in order to get the most objective perspective possible on physical energy, you have to remind yourself of the intimacy of mind energy to that physical energy. It doesn't happen innately, as you'll see as we're reading tonight. It'll remind us that the three energies, physical energy, mind energy, spirit energy, each have an absolute, so they're absolutely distinct. They do not overlap one iota in and of themselves. So there is the whole issue of what's transcendent of that absolute separation, what super absolute fact bridges that together, and that's where the Paradise Trinity and Mother Deity come in. But setting those complications aside, mind energy definitely is engaged through that very profound process. It definitely engaged too physical energy and has an immediate impact on it, which you see very definitively when you study the evolution of the material biologic structures, and you're wondering, why do they evolve? Well, it's the over-control through mind of that living matter that progresses it along its evolutionary path. If mind energy wasn't engaged, wasn't attuned to physical energy, that couldn't happen. And you'll see they actually speak of that right in the very first sentence here as we start reading tonight. So they're going to, we're heading to the end of the paper, so they're moving into a bigger picture context in that previous section that was touching upon some of the precise details. But you'll see they mention mind over and over again. We want to, and so that's what we're first and foremost looking for. I mean, there's other things there as well, of course. But you want to be constantly asking yourself, okay, what is this immediately telling me about mind? And then if I can recognize additional things, fine. But seek the recognition of mind first with what they're saying. All right, let's jump right in.
11, universe mechanisms. In the evaluation and recognition of mind, it should be remembered that the universe is neither mechanical nor magical. It is a creation of mind and a mechanism of law. But while in practical application, the laws of nature operate in what seems to be the dual realms of the physical and the spiritual, in reality, they are one. The first source and center is the primal cause of all materialization, and at the same time, the first and final father of all spirits. The Paradise Father appears personally in the extra Havona universes only as pure energy and pure spirit, as the thought adjusters and other similar fragmentations.
Okay. So, obviously, is about mind. First thing they're telling you in evaluation and recognition of mind. See, so they're wanting you to reflect more on the mind component of the picture, And when they say it should be remembered that the universe is neither mechanical nor magical. Okay, so first and foremost, who's going to have a tendency to assume it's mechanical? That's the person who's engaging those physical facts, that person who's favoring their individuality consciousness, their material consciousness, and they're trying to understand the knowledge of the physical world. And initially, it's not apparent to them, because they're so fixated, they aren't very objective, that it's more than just matter in a giant mechanical phenomenon. The other side, of course, if you very favor your unity consciousness, how does that, I mean, yes, of course, if you're very ignorant and superstitious and what, there's going to be magical thoughts, but more precisely, I mean, why are they contrasting magical with mechanical there? What's so magical, in a more precise sense, about the thought that that person who is tending to just see or imagine spirit as opposed to the matter? Well, I mean, none of us are literally blind to matter. We all can stub our toe if we don't watch where the bedpost is, okay? So none of us can literally avoid matter as a substance that's right there, present with you. But if you're fixating on spirit, so you have spirit in your head, no matter what notion you might have, it's probably a pretty immature, foolish notion, but nonetheless, you're trying to imagine spirit, and then there's matter. And you have all kinds of ideas about, probably there's a God, or maybe there's some sort of spiritual force or influence or whatever that is related to matter, with nothing in between. If you don't have mind, any relationship between spirit and matter is by definition magical. Okay? You can't get from one to the other. No matter how transcendent a fact is in play, no matter how super absolute an influence is in play, associating these three energies, if there aren't three energies, the two endpoints can't touch each other in any way, shape, or form. Mind is indispensable to the connection between matter and spirit. All right, and so the universe is a creation of mind and a mechanism of law.
But before you go on.
Yep.
You talked about this in the beginning of the papers of this when we were talking about modern science, even explaining things in a magical context, so to speak.
Right.
Along the lines of whether there are particular theories or, that this just happens sort of magically. Is that kind of in a way they're talking about in the magical part?
No, so that's a different kind of magical. In a science, 20th century, 21st century so-called scientist is putting forward theories, I'm calling them magical because he's assuming that they don't obey the law of causality, for instance. They're an acausal theory. So they're magical in different ways. Here the whole point is just I've got matter and I've got spirit, and I'm imagining, that God can do anything. Like he can make spirit engage matter without something between. No, he can't. No influence can connect spirit to matter without mind in between. Okay, it's indispensable to the association, and any thought otherwise is a magical thought. And so like I said, the mechanism of law that they say there, and notice how they quickly challenge you, but while in practical application the laws of nature operate in what seems to be the dual realms of the physical and the spiritual, okay, what's between the lines there? There's two substances. So these two endpoints are two substances. There's matter, material substance, and there's spirit, spiritual substance. There's two substances just as definitively ruled by law. If you're what you're imagining spirit to be is not as definitively ruled by laws as matter is, then you're imagining something that doesn't exist. Okay, it's just as precisely ruled by laws as matter is. Beginning with a gravity, and it obeys all the precise laws of spirit gravity, and then all of the details that we can't even really imagine. But you've got very definitive, immutable laws of the two substances. Okay, but then they say, in reality, they are one. Because there's this energy. It's not a substance, but there's this mind energy. There's this super additive consequence of the relationship between the two that allows the two to actually have a direct influence on each other, and then allows, like you were just saying, for an encompassment into a triunity, right? So that there is this triunity, which is what they mean by in reality they are one. The threefold energy is in reality, so the threefold actuality is in reality, a triunity. Okay, and then they throw in a little reminder. Okay, now we're talking about a definitive separation between matter and spirit. Okay, but there's a fact that's prior to any separation between matter and spirit, the first source and center. Okay, and so they remind you that even though the Father is prior to this separation of the absolute of matter, the Isle of Paradise, and the absolute spirit, the eternal Son. The first source and center is immediately behind those two phenomena, as they remind you there, the primal cause of all materialization, just in that sense that, you can think of the universal creator as the first source and center being involved in bringing the Isle of Paradise in the central universe into existence, but so he's a primal cause, but he's not, he didn't bring that tripod into existence, the matter for that tripod or whatever, right? But the primal cause, and also relative to spirit substance, the first and final father of all spirits. And why do they say first and final? I mean, because again, not temporal, he's in eternity, so you can think of him on the two ends, like, from a temporal perspective, before time began and after time ends, if you will, so the first and final father. But see, just those two things, okay? Not all three things, just the two. The Father doesn't have a direct relationship to mind energy, okay? Mind energy comes into existence separate from the Father. We mentioned this before. We were talking about mind. Remember how I was pointing out they brought that up in the previous section. Mind and those that are immediately related to mind are, from this perspective, transcendent of the Father. That's beyond what the Father is up to when you're talking about mind. And so, don't be surprised if we get into this. We're going to want to go flip things around to the other side. Instead of looking at it from the first source and center side of everything, we're going to need to flip around to the other side, where that which is sort of antipodal, if you will, to the Father, antipodal, opposite point, flip around to what is directly related to mind, which is what we're interested in here. They remind you, you don't even have the immediacy that we were just talking about of the Father related to the Isle of Paradise or to the Eternal Son, or even, there's some immediacy of the Father's presence in the central universe. We don't need to go into right now. Out here, you don't even have that. All you have out here is what they remind you there at the end. In the extra Havona universes, all you have, it is his personal ministry, but he's not here personally, you know, at all. He can't be out here personally, or there wouldn't be an out here. There has to be room for us. So he can't be out here personally, but he does have a personal ministry. And what is it? And we've spoken of it many times. He's prior to the separation between energy and spirit, so this ministry is somehow going to be the two together as one, as they say there. You know, this is one of those definitive spots where they remind you of what we talk about all the time. That personal ministry is, you know, as pure energy and pure spirit at the same time. Pure energy is primordial force. Right? But if you flip that around, you know, it's not two different ministries, it's just one ministry, so the analogy is to think of it as having two sides. You flip that pure energy around, the primordial force, the force charge of space, around, and what do you have on the other side? You have the thought adjusters and other similar fragmentations, quote-unquote pure spirit. So this ministry is not purely energy or purely spirit. It's prior to that. It's the two, you know, together, and so it's really neither. But it is, there. He at least has that engagement out here. But again, it's not a, you don't think of it as some sort of like, well, let's think of something that's kind of like triangular, and I'm going to think about it having three facets. No, there's just two. Again, there's no mind. Okay, the Father doesn't have any direct relationship to mind. All of that direct relationship to mind has been delegated from the first source and center. If you want to think of in the beginning was the first source and center sort of picture, all of that was delegated. He retained none of that direct relationship to mind. It's the Mother that has the direct relationship to mind. Yeah. So, and we'll see how they.
Doesn't mean he doesn't have a mind, right?
Right. He's minded, okay, but not in the way that we understand. He's not minded in the way that the third source and center is minded. He's minded in a way that's kind of similar to the way the eternal Son is minded. You know, those are two exceptions. I mean, both of them are prior. If you want to think in the sequence, you know, you don't get mind until you get the third source and center. See, so neither of them can have the mind as we understand it. A mind that does what we just described, relates the unity of spirit to the individuality of matter. Okay? Neither of them have a mind that is seated on individuality, like we think of mind as being. Okay? That begins, quote unquote, with the third source and center, that kind of mind. All right. So you get this little first paragraph that allows you to have something that you're, you know, reasonably familiar with the first source and center, a little something to hold on to, but now you have to courageously let go of the Father and explore out into uncharted territory about how you really understand mind. And remember, I mentioned this last time in the same mode. It's the same thing that happens when you go from the triunities to the triodities. The triunities are the ones that involve the Father, but there's no mind there. The triunities have no direct relationship to mind as potential, actual, or real. That's all the triodities. And fundamentally, it's the other side. If you go to the other side of the Father, you have the Paradise Trinity, and what stems from the Paradise Trinity, the Mother. That's what is a more immediate relationship with those triodities, where you can think about having one of the potential for matter and the potential for mind and the potential for spirit, the actual of matter, the actual of mind, the actual of spirit. I mean, mind is directly involved. All right, so let's see what they say here next.
Mechanisms do not absolutely dominate the total creation. The universe of universes, in toto, is mind-planned, mind-made, and mind-administered. But the divine mechanism of the universe of universes is altogether too perfect for the scientific methods of the finite mind of man to discern even a trace of the dominance of the infinite mind. For this creating, controlling, and upholding mind is neither material mind nor creature mind. It is spirit mind functioning on and from creator levels of divine reality.
Okay. All right, so they start out, why did they throw in the Latin? So the universe of universes in toto. Okay, why did they bring that in?
You didn't hear.
No, I heard you. Why did they bring that in to kind of get you off on the proper footing? You want to start thinking a little more philosophically. And a good way to start that is by recognizing what a classic Latin expression is, that in you're speaking more philosophically. Okay, so it isn't just, it kind of looks like, well, it must be kind of in total, you're thinking. Is that how I'm supposed to interpret that? No, you need to be more precise than that. Okay, when they say that the universe of universes is mind-planned, mind-made, and mind-administered, okay, do they mean, okay, what about this cup? If I think it means in totality, say, or something like that. Okay, so I'm supposed to be thinking that, every little part, like this cup of water, I've got mind monkeying with it, in a very part-wise way. No, that's why they added the in toto. That bit about mind planned, mind made, mind administered, it's only true in toto, as a whole, okay, is the literal meaning of it in this context, in toto, as a whole, okay, not as a bunch of parts or as a particular part, okay. If you think of the whole, okay, then you have that true. But you're not going to find that in a part. Okay, only as a whole is it so. Okay, and the moment you properly say it that way, okay, the Father is not the whole or the individuality of the whole. Okay, we've just stepped away from the Father. Okay, the Paradise Trinity is the whole, and the individuality of the whole is the Mother. Right, and the Mother is, mothers have wombs of mind. Mothers minister mind, not the Father. So when we're speaking about mind plan, mind made, mind administered, see, we're down inside now, the God that remains within. God is immanence, not God is transcendence, not the Father. We're inside now. All right, inside it's mind plan, mind made, mind administered as a whole. Now, there is a hierarchy of wholes, as we know. That's what the word universe is about. There's local universes, that's a whole. There's super universes, that's a whole, etc. A whole hierarchy. They've definitely shifted us, and they immediately are saying that, this whole bit about it's obviously going to be hard for some lowly creature to have a broad enough perspective to see the whole, as a whole, quote unquote, rather than just, I think it's a whole and it's a pile of parts. In toto, to have enough objectivity to actually see it as a whole, that's going to be an issue, especially if you're talking about really big things, like, the cosmos infinite, say, that big whole. And they bring in there, you're not going to discern even a trace of the dominance of the infinite mind. Okay. who is, if I capitalize the I and the M, the infinite mind? Who is that? The infinite mind is the infinite mother spirit. Right? So we're thinking about flipping things around, all the way around. If we're still up at the top level of everything, where we have the first source and center, if we flip it around to the other side, we have the third source and center. But specifically, in what sense do we have the third source and center? In the fullest sense, so that we have the infinite mind. The conjoint actor is just the absolute mind. You know, when you talk about the third source and center as a conjoint actor, that's just the absolute mind. To get the infinite mind is the infinite mother spirit. Now, all these different designations for the third source and center have some significance when you start to get precise. Okay, and you see them creating, controlling, upholding. Now, if you haven't gotten to this recognition of mother, like even the infinite mother spirit yet, you know, you can just, okay, I remember that line at the beginning of paper one, first think of him as a creator, then as a controller, and lastly as an infinite upholder. I guess that's what they're talking about. No. Yeah. Remember, like if you just look on the threefold actuality, or the psychic circles in the sevenfold, psychic circles in the sevenfold chart, there's three columns. This column is creators, this column is controllers, and you know, this is the cosmic mothers, that's the upholders. Right. Right. You know, we're specifically thinking about, you know, this is the infinite mother spirit in the sevenfold. You know, we're just thinking about literally the infinite mother spirit, not the infinite mother spirit in the sevenfold, but I can point to it here anyway. You know, as a mother, you're talking about the infinite mother spirit. The co-infinite upholder, the highest upholder, where you're still in the mode of there's fathers on one side and mothers on the other. Now, if you go up to the infinite level, you don't have father and mother. That's transcendent of that difference. But at the co-infinite level, you have the infinite mother spirit. You know, and if you want to think about, well, you know, as a creator, well, there's the conjoint actor. As a controller, well, there's the infinite spirit. Now, all three are there, creator, controller, and upholder. But what we're really specifically focused in on is the infinite mother spirit, quote unquote, the infinite mind, capital I, capital M. Father is not the infinite mind. The infinite mother spirit is. Okay. And when you think about the presence of the infinite mother spirit, even right here in this room, obviously it's a very transcendent presence, but you know, there's an omnipresence of the infinite mother spirit in this room even. And they speak of that, they speak of it as spirit hyphen mind presence, like they do at the end of the paragraph there. I mean, just the simplest way to think, they're going to use that hyphenated expression many times. Just the simplest way to think about it is, I'm going to be immediately engaged by mind, but there's spirit on top of that mind. So, I mean, the easiest way to begin to think about this is not to go all the way up to the infinite mother spirit, but just to think about the local universe and the creative mother spirit, a downstepped expression of the infinite mother spirit. That's local universe size. The creative mother spirit is a spirit hyphen mind presence. You know, the rubber meets the road with the mind, and then there's spirit on top of that. Like I can just think about inside of me, I have adjutant mind with an encirclement and the Holy Spirit on top of that. I have spirit augmenting on top of my mind. Right? So it's just, you know, think about that's the basic presence that's being downstepped all the way from the infinite mother spirit level all the way down to the local universe with the creative mother spirit is a spirit hyphen mind presence and functioning. You know, and it's functioning because fundamentally this ministry of mind is being done by the mother deity. Deity functions, persons act. Okay, so, I mean, yes, you know, she's a person, you know, our creative mother spirit, but most immediately, it's her mother deity that is the womb of that mind that's being ministered to you. Right? Okay, so, and it's, you know, it's always on and from creator levels of divine reality. I mean, even in a, you know, if you think about, remember in the previous section, they mentioned pre-adjutant mind, you know, mechanical mind. And you go, well, what about the mechanical controllers, the master physical controllers that actually minister that mechanical mind? They're not, you know, and you don't, shouldn't think of them as directly personalized deity. Well, yeah, maybe not as an individual precisely, but they're part of God the Sevenfold. So, yeah, even then, you know, and you're reminded of the purity of their ministry by calling them master physical controllers. You know, they're part of God the Sevenfold. So, it's always, you know, from creator levels of divine reality. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, say a biologist who's trying to think about living things, you know, there's such an obvious need for something besides molecules there to explain what's going on, you know, but sort of super consciously, we all know if, even if you just bring in mechanical mind, you're bringing in something that seems to connote more than just energy. You know, it seems like that would imply some sort of ministry, and hence there needs to be a minister, like the divine minister.
Big G.
Right. So, right. It hints at God, even at the lowest level of mechanical mind. So it's scary. For those who, you know, like they said at the beginning, who are trying to rationalize everything as purely mechanical. It may not be scary to those who are rationalizing everything as magical, but then they have no physics, you know, to what they're thinking about. So, yep.
Winston asks, does the local universe have a time where the creative mother spirit becomes a creature like in a bestowal for Michael?
No, she doesn't go through any sort of a... creature embodiment process in a way that some of the descending sons do. However, what he does part-wise, she does holistically. Remember, she has the kind of personality that can directly interface with all of the personalities in her domain collectively. Right? So, you know, and it's her mind you're using. So she doesn't need to bestow herself. In many ways, she is you, right? I mean, you start out as basic, you know, as an animal origin creature where you're literally just her, and then you're trying to step into that and begin to apply your personality and differentiate yourself out of that. So eventually you can be birthed out of her womb as an independent phenomenon. Okay? She doesn't need to bestow herself as a creature. She is all creatures in her local universe. I mean, she's every animal. And she's every, in the beginning, every animal origin being. You know, it's what allows you to be an integrous phenomenon before you even have the personality engaging at roughly age 6. She's the subtle personal influence that's there. You know, and seamlessly letting go and letting that new personality influence engage at roughly age 6. And, but even now, the integrity of myself is almost totally maintained by her, not me. I have such limited ability as a personality yet to keep myself together, you know. So a lot of me is her, right? I'm a bestowal of her in many ways right now. You know, we're literally her children.
Same with some of the
angelic. Yeah, in the same way that your mother's DNA is in every cell in your body. I mean, you know, you're that literally part of her.
Well, it's not just human.
Right, not just, all of the, every creature in her local universe. You know, especially the ones that are definitively tied to the local universe and don't have the liberty to leave it, right? They're very much in her womb. They're plugged into her mind. You know, if they, you know, were to go off on a tear, and, you know, they'd hit the local universe boundary and go unconscious, right? The only way an angel, the local universe angel, can leave the local universe is she rewires them, plugs them into a higher mother, right? And then they can leave. And they, you know, refer to that at times, as we talked about. Okay. All right. An upgrade. Yes, yeah. She gives them an upgrade.
The ability to discern and discover mind in universe mechanisms depends entirely on the ability, scope, and capacity of the investigating mind engaged in such a task of observation. Time-space minds, organized out of the energies of time and space, are subject to the mechanisms of time and space.
Our mind is definitely attuned to a time-space fact. You know, it's attuned to your physical nature. It's seated upon your, you know, your agitated mind is literally seated upon the electrochemical mechanism of your brain, and attuned to it, subject to it. Okay, and no amount of imagining is going to change the fact that your mind is subject to your matter, you know, attuned to your DNA. And you notice how they're just trying to remind you of what kind of objectivity it's going to take to really discern mind, the kind of three-dimensionality of their description, their ability, scope, and capacity. Right, just try to really flesh out the dimensionality of what you need. You know, not just ability and scope, but ability, scope, and capacity. So, you know, just all the objectivity that one can muster in order to see things as a whole rather than just as a bunch of parts. All right.
Motion and universe gravitation are twin facets of the impersonal time-space mechanism of the universe of universes. The levels of gravity response for spirit, mind, and matter are quite independent of time. But only true spirit levels of reality are independent of space, non-spatial. The higher mind levels of the universe, the spirit mind levels, may also be non-spiritual.
Non-spatial.
But the levels of material mind, such as human mind, are responsive to the interactions of universe gravitation, losing this response only in proportion to spirit identification. Spirit reality levels are recognized by their spirit content, and spirituality in time and space is measured inversely to the linear gravity response.
Ooh, it suddenly got a little bit more scientific sounding, didn't it? There's too much to unpack fully, but just briefly, let's touch on it a little bit here. So motion and universe gravitation are twin facets. So they're distinguishing those two. Now, technically, gravity is a motion also. What's the distinction they're making? You have sort of the motion that's internal, that, you know, makes objects objects. You know, that individuation of motion. And the motion phenomenon called gravity, the inward motion phenomenon we call gravity, is associated with that matter. And then you have, you know, the motion between objects, the relationship between objects. Okay, so that's their distinction there. Okay, so in this whole universe of motion, they're talking about the gravity part. The levels of gravity response for spirit, mind, and matter are quite independent of time. So you have the three energies, each has their own gravity, you know, like motion, independent of time. What does that mean? It means it's not an interactive phenomenon like we currently rationalize physical gravity. Okay? You know, if it's an interactive phenomenon, there has to be some sort of a temporality to that interaction. And, you know, they keep trying to make this literal. They haven't had much success at this, but if you've heard of the idea of gravitons, where they try to rationalize gravity literally as an interaction like this, like they're describing here. So you've got to send a virtual particle between the two masses, a graviton, quote unquote. Okay, it's going to go at the speed of light. See, so no, that would if it went at the speed of light, it would be dependent on time. No, it's independent of time because it's not an interaction. It's just a motion. It's just an inward motion. So you don't have to communicate anything. They're just in inward motion. And then when they say, but only true spirit levels of reality are independent of space, non-spatial. Okay, that's a little trickier. Let me take you up just quickly to paper 118, section 3, which is page 1297 in the single column. Some of this technical these technical elements are what we cover in Reawakening Philosophy, but I want to just briefly touch on it here. What they're referring to in that paragraph is what they speak of a little bit more precisely in the one, two, three, four, five, six, seventh paragraph of section 3, the last paragraph on page 1297. Paragraph that starts all patterns. let me just read this to you and explain it a little bit. All patterns of reality occupy space on the material levels. But spirit patterns only exist in relation to space. They do not occupy or displace space, neither do they contain it. Okay. The distinction here is the actuality of spirit substance, you know, does pervade space. They're not talking about the actuality of the substance. They're talking about the pattern imposed upon that, the reality of it, spirit patterns. The spirit patterns, they don't occupy, displace, or contain. They don't contain, so you don't want to think of a spirit pattern as like encompassing a region, and so it contains that space. You don't want to think of it as shoving space out of the way and displacing it, and you don't want to think of it as literally having space incorporated in the phenomenon like material patterns do. Remember how we talked about space is part of the motion that is those material systems. Material, like a an electron, occupies space. It doesn't just contain it, it occupies space.
That's not a pattern, that's an actuality.
No, it has a reality too. It has energy pattern attached to it. With energy, the actuality and the reality come together, and like they're saying on there, all patterns of reality occupy space on material levels. Okay? The energy pattern and the actuality of that energy are very much together, and they together occupy space. It's more distinct with spirit. The spirit substance itself, let's just say pervades space, to use a fuzzy enough word, because we don't know exactly how to think about it. I mean, it's more transcendent than the way matter, is occupying space. But it nonetheless is, I mean, there's a spirit womb, okay? There's, I'm immersed in her spirit energy right now, okay? It's spatial, the energy itself, okay? But not the pattern. Spirit patterns exist only in relation to space. And then remember how they said that the higher mind levels of the universe, the spirit mind levels, may also be non-spatial? Okay. right here in this paragraph in 118, but to us the master riddle of space pertains to the pattern of an idea. When we enter the mind domain, we encounter many a puzzle. Does the pattern, the reality of an idea occupy space? We really do not know. Remember the may, like they said? Albeit we are sure that an idea pattern does not contain space. But it would hardly be safe to postulate that the immaterial is always non-spatial. Okay, and I was just referring to that. Okay, mind energy and spirit energy are quote-unquote immaterial energies, okay, but don't assume that they're non-spatial. As energies, they're definitely spatial. There's mind energy that is spatially pervading this room. There's spirit energy that's spatially pervading this room. Okay, but the reality, the patterns on top, there's a lot of mystery to that. Okay, especially in the super additive transcendent thing of mind. You know, and okay, so that's, you know, I just wanted to give you that that passage up there. See, so that's when they, you know, they're saying, well, obviously, on the matter end of mind, it's got to be interfacing with the pattern being occupying space, but it also has to interface with the spirit end, where the spirit pattern does not occupy space. You know, so they say, well, okay, so it seems like kind of logically, the higher ends of mind, you know, may also be non-spatial. See. As a reality, you know, the important thing is, but only true spirit levels of reality are independent of space. Okay. How do you get true spirit levels of reality? Okay, you know, it's only in that full patterned context of the triunity that they're speaking there. The mere actuality of spirit energy does pervade space. Okay. All right, so that's all a little bit abstract, I know, but I just wanted to give you a little sense of how to begin to think about all that complexity. Okay. Okay, now the other thing here is very important, because notice how, even though that's kind of very, I mean, that's getting very philosophic and, you know, technical. Okay, they're using the word spirituality, okay, towards the end of that paragraph. You know, here back in paper 42. Okay, that's a word that you have, if you have a spiritual consciousness, you're interested in the word spirituality. Okay, remember how, you know, you've got to, if you're going to think about it properly, you've got to bring in law. And what they're talking about in the latter part of that paragraph is the way we often begin to understand the issue of spirit. Okay, so they say, you know, after that, it may also be non-spatial, but the levels of material mind, such as human mind, are responsive to the interactions of universe gravitation. Okay, your material mind, you want to think about as literally being subject to material gravity. And the easiest way to begin to think about the implication of that is, do you have a tendency, if you aren't choosing otherwise, to behave in your genetic instinctual way? Does material gravity tend to pull your consciousness down to the lower, you know, instinctive levels of your mind, and you just do whatever the biology, you know, yeah, right? Or do humans have tendency to become depressed? Does material gravity drag their consciousness down? Literally, that's what depression is. I mean, you can understand that literally as material gravity dragging your consciousness down, okay? And the only way to remedy that situation is what they say, losing this response, you know, like being drugged down in depression, losing this response only in proportion to spirit identification. Right? If there's some spirit identification, you can, and see, they're about to tell you what we always, the way we always rationalize this, you can think of spirit gravity as lifting you up out of that depression. Okay. Now, you don't want to literally think that material gravity points towards the center of the Earth and spirit gravity points away from the center of the Earth. Not, you know, literally like that. You know, but metaphorically, they're about to give you this metaphor, how to begin to understand your relationship to spirit when you're just a blob of matter. You know, you're going to experience it as a moderation of your relationship to material gravity. Okay? As they're saying here, losing this response only in proportion to spirit identification, spirit reality levels are recognized by their spirit content. Okay, start with that. Okay, spirit reality levels, remember we were just talking about that, that doesn't, you know, contain, occupy, or display space, the reality part. So how can you understand it from a spatial perspective like all we all are? Well, you can't directly, but you can recognize it's there by the spirit content. The actual spirit substance, okay, is pervading space. Okay? And if there's actuality, there's reality, you know, beyond that, even if you can't directly experience any spatial expression of that reality, the actuality, you know, is giving you an indirect recognition of spirit reality levels. And then they say this, and spirituality in time and space is measured inversely to the linear gravity response. So you're not going to directly experience spirit gravity. You can't measure it, okay? But if you are attuned to a full sense of yourself cosmically, you can notice when there is a moderation of your material gravity response. Okay? If you're noticing that there seems to be an anti-gravity influence in your mind. You don't seem to be drugged down so ponderously. Okay? You can't whip out a tape measure and see 5.3 units of spirit. Okay? But inversely, you can know, you know, that there is a spirit influence that's tempering, you know, that material gravity dragging you down, okay? So, you know, the degree to which you're not being drugged down is the degree to which you can logically deduce that there's some spirit even though you can't experience it directly.
This is not the gravity that you would eliminate by going up in a spaceship and getting out of the gravity, so to speak.
Is that
literal?
No, it's not, of course. I mean, astronauts might get a little excited when they first see the blue orb, you know, that euphoria, you know, but, you know, then it becomes, you know, normal.
No,
you know, they aren't struggling with being manic the entire time they're, you know, on the space station, okay?
There would be no space
station. Okay, all right, okay, so.
Because mind is.
Right. Just see again. So, like I'm saying, you don't think about this literally. You know, like, you know, what's making me depressed is what makes this cup fall to the ground if I let go of it. No, not literally like that, but think about how you have a material mind, and so there is going to be a downwardness influence, even if I'm standing on my head. Okay, right in my mind. Okay, and that can be remedied by some spirit identification. Okay. So in retrospect, you can go, you know, I didn't act as low level in that situation as I used to. There must be some spirit gravity that's, you know, holding me up at a higher level. I'm not down there riding the roller coaster ride over the dimples in my genetics like I used to, okay? Where you're up and down and up and down, okay? You're getting up and you're riding more smoothly. Okay? And what's keeping you up above those low levels with all its divots? Some spirit gravity, right? Some, you know, some inversely to the material gravity response. Okay? So, to define spirituality relative to material gravity. So that the word spirituality isn't some mystical, magical nonsense word in like it's always been in humans' heads. Okay? Look what they're doing there. They're defining that. It's like, how dare you take my word spirituality and define it relative to Newtonian gravity? You've just corrupted it. No, I've just brought law into it. I've taken magic out of it. Okay? So that's what they're doing there. They're trying to get you in relationship to the laws of the two substances. All right, let's get some more here.
Well, I have one more question.
Okay, yep.
You know, when it talks here about the non-spatial part that has mm-hmm. to do with the spiritual, mm-hmm. is that kind of like the, you can put 1,000 angels on the head of a pin because they don't take up space, so to speak?
No, they do take up space. Angels take up lots of space. You can't, yeah. Now, what that is... okay, so think about, you have some spirit energy that's in relationship to you. You know, if nothing else, the encirclement of the Holy Spirit, you know, or, I mean, the Spirit of Truth is a literal spirit ministry. There's spirit energy literally involved there. Okay, and you have a thought adjuster, right? That, you know, has a relationship to space. That's spirit energy. Okay, but your personality is spirit pattern. Your personality... That pattern is not spatial. That spirit pattern is non-spatial. It's independent of space, as they're saying there. That's the any reality you give to that spirit with your personality is not a spatial phenomenon. That's what they're asking you to try to somehow wrap your mind around. Okay. And that should help, yeah, pardon the pun, and that should help you also to distinguish self from personality, okay? Your self occupies space, you know? Someone can take a ruler and measure yourself. They can see mind energy, you know, you have a mindal self, okay? But they can't measure the dimensions of your personality. Okay, I mean, why would personality be not very recognized yet in human history? Okay, it's not even spatial. How much is our mind, which, you know, like is subject to the mechanisms of time and space, how much would we initially imagine something that's non-spatial when what we're imagining with is subject to the mechanisms of time and space? Not very much to begin with, right? So it's not surprising that we haven't, you know, really recognized personality. Or, more to the point, don't be surprised if you aren't manifesting very much personality yet. Okay? You have to try to, you know, establish a mind that, by definition, to begin with, is subject to the mechanisms of time and space. You have to try to establish some transspatial, transtemporal character to that mind before personality has any way to even identify with it.
That has nothing to do with cocktails.
Right? And definitely doing cocktails is going to take your mind down. That's going to foster the material gravity pulling your consciousness down. Right? You know, so think about the irony of people trying to, you know, why we call distilled, things spirits, right? Thinking that makes you more spiritual. No, that's actually limiting your spirituality. That's increasing the material gravity, right? The only way that you have anything relationship to spirit gravity is by grace. And anything you do of a material or mechanical nature is going to be antithetical to that. It's going to take you down, not up. Okay. The only reason it's rationalized that it's taking you up and it's making you spiritual is that it not only will take you down, it'll take you sideways. And it takes you off into some sideways space that's not normal. Okay? And you rationalize that non-normalcy is going up, but it's actually going sideways. It's not super normal. It may not be very subnormal, but it's definitely abnormal. It's definitely horizontal. Okay, that state of mind. Something on the webinar?
Yeah. Is no outside force can force us downward against our will. Spirit bad gravity cannot be discovered to be detrimental as a magical force, as in the dark force, right?
Right. I mean, there's no... Okay, so again, when you're talking about inside, you know, your inner life, and, you know, that's... You know, that's a bastion of security by grace. You know, no one can get in there and mess it up for you. But that's the least of your worries, is some outside force potentially messing you up. They could never do the damage that you can do, right? You know, the real problem is you in your ignorance and what you might misguidedly do in your inner life. If you start to use your personality in a detrimental mode rather than a productive mode, that will cause great problems. But you know, initially, don't go off into those fearful spaces. Just, you know, just appreciate that you got the basic biologic phenomenon that you need to work on identifying that which is transcendent of where you started, so that your level of consciousness can begin to elevate in the mind energy system, so that your life can ride above the roller coaster that's always down there going around your chromosomes, okay? That's invariably a roller coaster ride, you know, or a cork in the ocean, or whatever analogy you want to use. Okay, so inversely to linear gravity response is what you're looking for. All right, let's get some more here.
Linear gravity response is a quantitative measure of non-spirit energy. All mass, organized energy, is subject to this grasp. Is subject to this grasp, except as motion and mind act upon it. Linear gravity is the short-range cohesive force of the macrocosmos, somewhat as the force of intra-atomic cohesion is the short-range forces of the microcosmos. Physical materialized energy, organized as so-called matter, cannot traverse space without affecting linear gravity response. Although such gravity response is directly proportional to mass, it is so modified by intervening space that the final result is no more than roughly approximated when expressed as inversely according to the square of the distance. Space eventually conquers linear gravitation because of the presence therein of the anti-gravity influences of numerous supermaterial forces which operate to neutralize gravity action, and all responses thereto.
Okay, another kind of big mouthful paragraph. Let's just step through it again a little bit here. Okay, linear gravity response. So, we're basically just talking about Newtonian, you know, think just Newtonian gravity, you know, proportional to the mass, inversely proportional to the square of the distance. Okay. Linear gravity response is a quantitative measure of non-spirit energy. Okay. You know, the more the mass, the more the linear gravity response. All mass, organized energy, is subject to this grasp, except as motion and mind act upon it. All right, I mean, just in, you know, just take some trivial sense of, you know, if you have a rotating object, you know, it's trying to fling the mass off, you know, that motion is counteracting that tendency for, you know, the matter to collapse. That's just a simple example of motion modifying the situation from just being purely inward with the gravity. And then, okay, there's this hand I have in front of my face, and if I lift this hand up, I'm going counter to gravity, right? Mind over matter, you know? The influence of my mind on this matter can tell this hand to go up. Gravity would only tell it to go down, right? I can definitely modify what gravity is doing to me by the imposition of mind, right? So, accept as motion and mind, act upon it. You know, see, they keep bringing in mind. Remember, even though we're bringing in a little bit more physics, it's, you know, we're trying to keep a mind in mind. Okay, that bit about the short range. We were just talking about the intra-atomic cohesion. Why is there a rough analogy? If you're thinking about the inwardness of physical gravity, like the inwardness that's going on in the solar system because of the suns, and the planets are all staying nearby the sun, when we just were talking about atomic cohesion, is that exactly the way an atom works? Do you think about it in the same exact way? No, but you notice how they say it's somewhat. Okay, they throw in that somewhat as the forces of the intra-atomic cohesion. All of that bit about the mesotron, you know, that set of motion that's within the atomic system that's keeping the electrons associated with the nucleus, that whole phenomenon, all of that is happening localized. There's the basic sphere of the atom, the domain that's set apart, because there's an overall inwardness there. There's an overall collecting, you know, centeredness there, just like with the solar system. So in that sense, like we talked about, you have a basic inwardness that is there unless you go to element 101, and then it's net outward, you know, and then you don't have that. But you have that overall net inward domain, and it's bounded. It doesn't go to infinity. And they're pointing out, I mean, gravity in the macrocosmos is the same way. Even though in the simplistic expression of Newton's law of gravitation, universal law of gravitation, product of the masses divided by the square of the distance between them, you know, that the force is proportional to that ratio. It doesn't literally end up going to infinity like it would appear from that, you know, where I can have 1/r squared, I could make that r bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, until it goes to infinity and then the force goes to zero. You know, one divided by infinity is zero. But that doesn't actually ever happen because space is not empty. You know, as they're pointing out here, it's only roughly approximated when expressed as inversely according to the square of the distance. It is directly proportional to mass. That doesn't change. I mean, the amount of mass is how much inward motion is there. But the relationship of that inward motion to another object, you know, as that other object gets farther and farther away, it has a diminishing, you know, influence on that other object. And eventually you're going to get out where influences that would take you away from that inward context are going to be greater. Okay? The simplest thing is just the basic outwardness of the force charge. You know, the force charge of space, the primordial force, is an outward motion. And all the things, all the sub-electronic things associated, you know, with that are like marker dots, like we've been saying, on that force charge, and are all outward. That whole phenomenon is just definitively outward. You know, and if I'm a little test particle moving away from, you know, a sun, say, you know, I'm getting farther and farther away, 1/r², I'm feeling less and less gravity, I'm eventually just going to be in a domain where, if nothing else, all the sub-electronic stuff that's tending to be outward and is, you know, impinging upon me is going to totally overwhelm any tiny little bit of inwardness that I have, you know, still in relationship to that sun way off in the distance. Right? And so, you know, I'm going to lose that whole 1/r² thing. It's going to, you know, there's going to be some outer limit where that starts to break down. Okay, and another way, besides just that simple of the outwardness of the force charge, if you go to paper 11, section 7, which is on page 125, the last paragraph of section 7 in paper 11, they refer to what they're just talking about there. I'll give you another example. That last paragraph, I don't know, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th paragraph of section 7. They say, they were just talking about the alternating levels in the master universe. Right? Super universe level, first outer space level, etc. This alternate zoning of the master universe, in association with the alternate clockwise and counterclockwise flow of the galaxies, is a factor in the stabilization of physical gravity, designed to prevent the accentuation of gravity pressure to the point of disruptive and dispersive activities. Such an arrangement exerts anti-gravity influence and acts as a brake upon otherwise dangerous velocities. Right. See, so there's another example where they're talking about presence therein of the anti-gravity influences of the numerous supermaterial forces. Right. You have the flows in the levels. You've got all this mass, you know, like say all the mass in the first outer space level that might want to be tugging on, say, the Milky Way galaxy and ripping it out of the super universe level, which would not be a good thing. So we'd like to set up a system where the Virgo cluster can't rip the Milky Way galaxy out of the super universe level. Well, how do you do that? Well, you make them two ships passing in the night. Right? They're not sitting there just, ad infinitum with the Virgo cluster just dragging and dragging on it. Okay? The two pass by each other, you know. And so before anything in the outer space levels could exert an undue influence, you know, it passes by. You know, and just speed it up in your mind and make it go around, you know, it all equals, it balances out and everything stays stable. You know, it's kind of like the way the tiny little shepherd moons keep the rings of Saturn together, right? You've got just a bunch of dust particles, right, in the equatorial plane of Saturn there, really close in, you know, and left to their own desires, they would just all drift off, right? But there's these tiny little shepherd moons, you know, going around, and they scoot all the dust, you know, into a nice line, you know, and the dust starts drifting, you know, and around they come again, scoot them back in a line, you know, right? That's why they're called shepherd moons. They just keep, you know, they keep all those dust particles from floating off. And so the same way you've got a very complex dynamic equilibrium, you know, where you have these other influences, you know, and they're saying super material because, you know, it's that flow in those levels has nothing to do with, you know, a gravitational orbit or anything. You know, it's just literally a flow in the force charge and everything is going with it, right? The Milky Way galaxy is not in orbit in a Newtonian gravity sense, in a Keplerian sense around the central universe. It's just going with the flow in the super universe level, the counterclockwise flow, right? Literally. Okay, so that's what they're talking about, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, if you look at a lot of popular scientific things, you know, they'll talk about how, oh, they're really worried that this, all this mass, you know, which is in the second outer space level, you know, is eventually going to, you know, do such and such to the Milky Way galaxy. No, it's not. You know, they're ignorant of the flows and,
And there's the quiescent zone too.
Right, and not to mention the quiescent zones and all that sort of stuff. Yes, right. But, right, so that's what they're referring to. All right, let's keep going here.
Extremely complex and highly automatic appearing cosmic mechanisms always tend to conceal the presence of the originative or creative indwelling mind from any and all intelligences far below the universe levels of the nature and capacity of the mechanism itself. Therefore, it is inevitable that the higher universe mechanisms must appear to be mindless to the lower orders of creatures. The only possible exception to such a conclusion would be the implication of mindedness in the amazing phenomena of an apparently self-maintaining universe. But that is a matter of philosophy rather than of actual experience.
Yeah, rather than one of actual experience. Okay. What's an example of a lower order creature who looked at the universe and said, I think it's a self-maintaining universe. Right, Lucifer. Which of the three principles of the Lucifer Manifesto expresses that belief? Yep, number one. First principle of the Lucifer Manifesto, part of that is that it is a self-maintaining universe. Okay? What would he have needed to not think that? Better eyes? No. No. It's not a matter of something that you can experience. Okay? And he doesn't need the Urantia book either. He had the Urantia book. Yeah, effectively. Right? I know it was, but just, you know, to make the point, you need something more intimate than so-and-so told you so. Okay? Lots of people told Lucifer so. Okay? What he needs is logical acumen. He needs the first cosmic intuition, which he'd lost sight of, insight of. Right? That is a matter of philosophy. I mean, if you look at the universe and it appears to be self-maintaining, you go, yes, but that's illogical. I mean, matter can't maintain itself. Okay? It's not minded. Matter has to be maintained, right? Okay? All right, so, you know, just remember, even very high beings relative to us, you know, primary Lindon index, can get caught up in appearances. Right? If you don't have a philosophic mind, if your mind isn't a personal living philosophy, you're subject to the same tangential thoughts as Lucifer was. You need to take delight in cultivating, having a mind that's not susceptible to going with appearances. Okay, learn how to overrule appearances with your logical recognition. All right, so that's, you know, that's the biggie. That's you know, in between the lines in that. And you notice that they're stressing it again. Why do they keep coming back to this? You know, extremely complex and highly automatic appearing cosmic mechanisms always tend to conceal the presence, etc. Okay. Have humans long ago recognized the existence of the genuine God the Mother? No. They've had anthropomorphic, you know, things. You know, we're not talking about Isis here, okay? We're not talking about some anthropomorphic female deity, okay? We're talking about something that humans have never considered before, mother expressions of deity, ubiquitous deity that's personalized, okay? Originative or creative, like the creative mother spirit. Okay, they're trying to remind you of your challenge is to recognize logically the existence of God the Mother. You're going to need to have a personal living philosophy in the upper domain of your hourglass, if the fact of God the Mother is going to be clear in your mind. You know, as a simple little animal origin creature, touched by grace, able to become aware of the laser beam of God the Father that's beamed into your mind, okay, you know, that's child's play. Like Jesus said, you must enter the kingdom as a child. A child can find God the Father. A child can't find God the Mother. Now, it requires a logic that even Lucifer didn't possess after, you know, a very, very long time in existence. Okay, he still didn't have the kind of objectivity, you know, that would tell him that even though it's apparently self-maintaining, that's illogical. It can't be literally self-maintaining. Do you have that kind of integrity? Right? And if you do, the more you have that kind of integrity, the more the fact of God the Mother is an inescapable logical recognition in your mind. Right? So what you're trying to do is what humans haven't had the logic to do. And that's why they haven't recognized the existence of God the Mother. God the Mother is obvious logically, but only if you have the requisite logical mind. You got to go beyond the little childlike mind that can't, doesn't have the ability, scope, or capacity. You know, like, you know, they keep stressing this. Take delight in cultivating, having the mind where the existence of God the Mother is obvious logically. It'll be quite some time before, you know, it becomes something that you see, but your insight can know.
Yep. Well, Lucifer recognized that Michael was his father and not his rightful ruler. I mean, he couldn't, he wasn't blind to that, but he must have been blind to the fact that he had a mother as well.
No, I mean, he knew he had a mother. See, again, it's all a matter of level. I mean, He takes all the local universe stuff for granted because he sees all that as, you know, I mean, just, you know, the local beings monkeying around. But he doesn't see God the Mother in the big picture. Right? You need to be able to go all the way up to the infinite Mother Spirit in order to know that the truly big picture is not self-maintaining. Right. Even though it appears that way.
Right. Seems crazy, though. I mean, if he recognized the mother locally, then how in the world would it not continue?
Well, another thing, too, to keep in mind, remember, until 2,000 years ago, the creative mother spirit wasn't discernible personally to lower beings. It's just 2,000 years ago. Rebellion was 200,000 years ago. The Creative Mother Spirit wasn't as personal as she is now. You know, now even we will be able to recognize her as a person when we get up there. You know, those who ascended 10,000 years ago didn't get to do that. They left the local universe not being able to have that experience. They'll have to come back to be able to experience their Creative Mother Spirit personally, because she wasn't recognizable personally, you know, till just recently.
But won't they get that sort of education on either the constellation or...
No, we're talking about they left the local universe.
Once they've left,
it may be a long time before they get back to this local universe. Yeah. Well, gotta go all the way to paradise and
weren't told that she existed.
Well,
right.
They just couldn't shake her.
They just couldn't literally recognize her as a person. You know, they recognized her as a spiritual and mindful presence and everything. It's not like she's invisible, but not... Remember, again, in order to recognize someone personally, you have to recognize something that's non-spatial. Okay? So think about that. Oh, I know you as a person. You know, I'm thinking this outline here, which is pretty spatial. Your personality is not spatial.
Not as much as it used to be.
Okay? Right?
So when I recognize somebody on Facebook without seeing them, is that nonsense?
Now, I'm just trying to challenge you about, you know, don't use the word personality for something that's, you know, prosaic in any way, shape, or form. All right. Let's see. I think that's it there. Yeah, let's keep going.
Since mind coordinates the universe, fixity of mechanisms is non-existent. The phenomenon of progressive evolution associated with cosmic self-maintenance is universal. Excuse me. The evolutionary capacity of the universe is inexhaustible in the infinity of spontaneity. Progress towards harmonious unity, a growing experiential synthesis superimposed on an ever-increasing complexity of relationships, could be effected only by a purposeful and dominant mind.
Okay, so just, I think that's pretty straightforward. I mean, things like the infinity of spontaneity, remember the word spontaneous literally means of free will. Right? So, there's no limits that you can put upon free will. And so that's the infinity of spontaneity that they're speaking of there. It's very important to know that literal sense of the word spontaneous, otherwise you can't properly interpret a lot of sentences in the book. Just pointing out that if you're going to have this growing experiential synthesis, the entire time that you have an ever-increasing complexity, you're going to have a fact that is transcendent of all the matter and spirit and encompasses it. Right? In the immediate finite sense, what mind, what purposive and dominant mind is transcendent of all the finite facts? The Supreme Mind. Capital S, capital M. Right? But you take that all the way up, it's however high a mind you need. That fact that mind is a superadditive consequence of the relationship between matter and spirit, superadditive, so it can encompass, that allows it to be able to work with any set of facts, material or spiritual. And keep manifesting that purposive desire, even though it's an ever-increasing complexity. Okay. It's like, well, okay, what's that? How's that relevant to me? Just, that's what you're trying to do with your mind. You're trying to have a mind that is genuinely mindful, genuinely has that degree of transcendence like that, where you're on top of the picture. You're not constantly caught off guard. You have some objectivity. You have some encompassment. You can face facts and adjust them to ideals in order to achieve wisdom. And if you're lost down in the trees, you can't do that. Okay? You need to have some real mind activity.
Right? So you're saying that the mind that we have is a whole lot greater than the mind that we have.
Yes. Yeah, the potential is
potential,
is limitless.
We all have a potential mind, but we just don't actualize
right.
it, so to speak.
So the sentence in the book,
we have the potential
Chris knows sense. What I'm about to say, paper 16, section 9, paragraph 9, but it is sad to record that so few persons on your rancha take delight in cultivating these qualities of courageous and independent cosmic thinking mind, right? It is very sad for the celestials to record that humans have vastly more mind than they need for any difficulty, and none of them basically are using one whit of it, right? It's really sad to record that so few persons, okay, are even trying to consecrate their mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, and so that they can have the objectivity that just naturally comes with that to deal with all kinds of, you can deal with ever-increasing complexity of relationships, and not bat an eye.
Does it have to do with interfacing with the brain too?
No, it has to do with interfacing with the other end, not the material end. That is automatically interfaced, and that's the problem. How much identification with spirit do you have? Like we talked about up here, right? And what spirit are we talking about? The Holy Spirit. That's what they're talking about, taking delight in cultivating. Identifying with the Holy Spirit. Not identifying with your magical beliefs about adjusters fixing your life or something like that. No, start at the foundation. Take delight in cultivating logical acumen, moral discrimination, and genuine spiritual insight. That's where it has to start. You have to develop a reflective thinking mind.
Right? So that sad to record sentence is, they're saying it's sad to record, even with the genetics we have, we could be doing so much more.
Right.
Not because of.
Right. Especially now that if you actually would take some delight in cultivating your relationship with the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth and the Thought Adjuster might be able to do something, right? They basically, those two influences can't do anything when all you are using is your encirclement in the Holy Spirit that you were given by grace. For instance, with that Holy Spirit encirclement by grace, what can the Spirit of Truth do? What can that ministry do? Nothing except allow you to get an adjuster when you're not a third circler. And now it's all it can do. And so it's just sitting there twiddling its thumbs, waiting for the next thing to do. Okay? It's done everything it can do with your encirclement by grace, what you have as a child of God. If you haven't taken delight in cultivating, that Spirit of Truth is doing nothing. The adjuster's doing nothing. The only thing the adjuster can do with that encirclement by grace and the Holy Spirit is make an embryonic soul. And then it's done. And it's sitting there waiting. But it's sad to record that so few persons are doing anything that would allow that adjuster to do step two.
Okay. Yeah, it did that on day one.
Right. Right. It did that the instant it arrived at roughly age six.
So do you think most people know how to do anything?
No. And it's because it's very difficult to develop reflective thinking. That's why you have to start about, it's a huge process. It begins with developing a relationship with human philosophy and developing that sort of mind and recognizing that what you're striving for has to go beyond all those brilliant minds. The only way you can do that is with the fifth epical revelation.
Does education come into play?
The purpose of education is to develop your relationship with the three cosmic intuitions. Yeah, that's the end of 16. Yeah, paper 16, section 6 says that is the only purpose of education.
True education.
Yeah, true education.
The thing about it is the environment that we're all in. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's purposeful to keep us all very distracted and dumbed down and all that kind of stuff. So
But again, you have what did they say there? An infinity of spontaneity. There isn't any environmental influence that you can't infinitely transcend in potential. You can choose to not be a hopeless victim. I mean, again, what does paper 16, section 6 talk about? Do you want to be a hopeless victim of antecedent causation? Or do you want to be a human? Do you want to stand above all of those influences and actually use your personality to choose to not be subject to them? It's up to you. Okay? Just choose. All right, let's get the last paragraph in there.
The higher and the universe mind associated with any universe phenomena, the more difficult it is for the lower types of mind to discover it. And since the mind of the universe mechanism is creative spirit mind, even the mindedness of the infinite, it can never be discovered or discerned by the lower level minds of the universe, much less by the lowest mind of all, the human. The evolving animal mind while naturally God-seeking, is not alone and of itself inherently God-knowing.
Okay. Again, just stressing, you know, this, you know, you got to take up this challenge to actually recognize the logical reality that is encompassed by the mother. And when they throw in, when they say creative spirit mind, again, you know, creative mother spirit, you're thinking, but they throw in parenthetically, even the mindedness of the infinite, okay? The infinite made mind is the infinite mind. Capital I, capital M, the infinite mother spirit. You know, they're taking you, you know, all the way up to the top, even the infinite mother spirit. That last sentence, the evolving animal mind, while naturally God-seeking. Okay, what's that referring to? Why is your animal origin mind naturally God-seeking? Which adjutant are we talking about?
Sixth
adjutant, your religious impulse, right? The word God is going to be in heavy quotes, right, to begin with. Right? It might be a pretty rock or something that you're worshiping, but okay. But the sixth adjutant is going to make you quote unquote God seeking. Okay? Is not alone and of itself inherently God knowing. Okay? In order to be God knowing, that's your religious consciousness, not just your religious impulse, but your actual religious consciousness. That comes from encirclement of the Holy Spirit, specifically the third cosmic intuition. With the third cosmic intuition, you can actually be God-knowing, have a religious consciousness, have spiritual insight. Sad to record that that is not very profound. But that's just God-knowing. That's not God-conscious. God consciousness, when that term occurs in the book, that's way, 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 way beyond God knowing. Okay? And in many ways, God knowing is way beyond where most people are, God seeking. Their sixth adjutant, that religious impulse. Okay? So step one, you have this thing way off in the distance that you can strive for, God consciousness, which, you know, takes a lot of philosophic recognition even to figure out what that is. It's a very transcendent, complex thing. Let's try to see if we can differentiate our sixth adjutant instinct from our relationship to the Holy Spirit. Let's try to be genuinely God-knowing, not just God-seeking. That's step one. Take delight in cultivating. And if you want that phenomenon of transitioning to bringing in the third cosmic intuition to not take you off into fanaticism, like the revelators say it often does, you're juicing up the sixth adjutant, okay, and you can take you off into fanaticism really easily. Don't just try to do the third cosmic intuition. You need to do all three, especially the logical acumen, the first cosmic intuition. That'll keep you grounded so you won't go off into fanaticism when you start bringing in the third cosmic intuition. Develop your logical acumen. Not just because it's an italicized set of words, apparently self-maintaining, can you know yourself logically that the universe must not be, as it appears, self-maintaining. That's illogical. Can you feel that in your bones, the illogic of a self-maintaining universe? Okay, Lucifer couldn't. Most so-called scientists can't. Oh, by the way, so-called, I forgot. You know, up in that paragraph there, the fourth one from the end, in the middle when they said organized as so-called matter,
yeah.
I forgot to comment on that.
Yeah.
Why does it say so-called matter?
Yeah.
The word matter, you know, is literally invoking the idea that that's the stuff that the universe is made out of, i.e. it's a universe of matter. No, it's the so-called universe of matter. It's actually a universe of motion. And that's why they're saying so-called. The stuff is not matter, you know, that the universe is made out of is not actually matter, as we, you know, the material substance. It's motion. It's a universe of motion. All right, let's get this last section in here. Okay. And this one, both of these sections we deal with in greater detail in Reawakening Philosophy 1, and especially the technical issues of pattern and form. Way too complicated to go into here. That's one of our tasks in Reawakening Philosophy 1. But notice the mind dominance part of that. Let's get that at least. That as we're reading this, don't think blob of molecules. Think mind first.
Section 12, pattern and form, mind dominance. The evolution of mechanisms implies and indicates the concealed presence and dominance of creative mind. The ability of the mortal intellect to conceive, design, and create automatic mechanisms demonstrates the superior creative and purposeful qualities of man's mind as the dominant influence on the planet. Mind always reaches out towards 1. Creation of material mechanisms, 2. Discovery of hidden mysteries, 3. Exploration of remote situations, 4. Formulation of mental systems, 5. Attainment of wisdom goals, 6. Achievement of spirit levels, 7. The accomplishment of divine destinies, supreme, alternate, and absolute.
Okay, so just the mind dominance there, you know, that they're trying to point out how basically logical it is that we aren't just blobs of matter, that there's mind. The ability of the mortal intellect to conceive, design, and create automatic mechanisms demonstrates the superior creative and purposive qualities of man's mind as the dominant influence on the planet. Mind dominates matter. Okay? Right now, there's no, basically, in general, people don't believe in mind, you know, the so-called smart people on the planet, okay? They just believe in matter, okay? And they look at a blob of molecules that they call a human, and they look at the blob of molecules that they call the Earth, and the blob of molecules they call the Earth is bigger than the blob of molecules that's a human, and therefore, the Earth dominates the human, you know, and we should, you know, put ourselves in subservience to, you know, Mother Nature or whatever anthropomorphism of the Earth you invoke. Yeah? No. No. You know, it's the other way around. Right. The mind dominates the matter. We are
here.
The universe is mind made and personality managed. We are here to use our mind's dominance of matter to dominate the Earth. Okay, that's what matter, that's the role of matter, is subservience to mind. Now, and you go, well, but humans are ignorant and that's, they're going to ruin the Earth. No, take delight in cultivating a mind that isn't ignorant.
That's material idealism. That's
right.
Exactly what you
just said. Right, just how quantitative it is. The Earth is bigger, therefore, you know, it's the boss. No, it's not the way it works. You know, and do you have the kind of transcendent consciousness, you know, that is above the matter and the spirit? You know, so, you know, your mind, you know, works like this list. You know, just think about things like, you know, discovery of hidden mysteries and exploration of remote situations. Just a top-down, objective point of view that you know, are you just down there in the matter? You know, you're such a low level of mind that you're basically just matter? Or do you have genuine mind? Mind that's beginning to really impinge upon spirit. You know, so you have attainment of wisdom goals, achievement of spirit levels. Okay, so that's, to get this top-down, step one is to use your mind to dominate your matter. That's called self-control. And then if you have self-control, then you put that out into the outer life, and you control the earth. That same proper control that you control yourself with. That's what the earth is waiting for, to be controlled by well-controlled minds. All right.
Mind is always creative. The mind endowment of an individual animal, mortal, Moranchan, spirit ascender, or finality attainer is always competent to produce a suitable and serviceable body for the living creature identity. But the presence phenomena of a personality or the pattern of an identity as such is not a manifestation of energy, either physical, mindal, or spiritual. The personality form is the pattern aspect of a living being. It connotes the arrangement of energies, and this, plus life and motion, is a mechanism of creature existence.
Okay, so I'm not going to try to, you know, make all that clear, because like I said, that gets too complicated. But just a couple of things to notice there. Notice how they're directly reminding you that personality is spirit pattern. See, the phenomenon of a personality or the pattern of an identity. Okay, personality is spirit pattern. They're speaking directly to that fact here. There's these two facts that humans don't currently recognize: form and pattern. And pattern manifests through form, in and through form, as patterned form. This, you know, we're talking about personality, the spirit pattern, that realityizing of spirit, and you know, it's non-spatial, okay? The form doesn't denote the arrangement. Notice that. It connotes the arrangement. The form is not the arrangement of the energy. It's certainly not merely the outline, you know, in the spatial sense. Okay? Don't think spatially like that. It's not the figuration, it's the configuration. It's what's with the CON prefix. It's what's with the figuration. It's what's with the arrangement. These sorts of more abstract, intangible things, Aristotle was starting to think about, but subsequent people couldn't really figure it out, and they've just thrown pattern and form away. Okay? We need to rediscover those two elements. Okay, and that's what, you know, this is how we're using this section in Reawakening Philosophy, to try to bring that back again. Because without pattern and form, you can't have a logical understanding of even how I move my arm. Moving my arm is completely impossible if I don't have form. Okay, and that's just to give you an idea of how important this is to figure out, to have a logical picture, to have a philosophic picture of things. All right, so that's what's going on in there, is that this whole issue of form and pattern form. But notice this whole bit about the mind is always competent to produce a suitable and serviceable body for the living creature identity. Oh, so my mind assembled my molecules of my body, or it's going to assemble the molecules of my Moranchan body? No. Okay, mind dominance, okay? Fundamentally, you know, you're a mindal self, not a material self, or, you know, even a Moranchan body self, okay? You're a mindal self. So this pattern influence on the form puts forms in the mind. And the mind is tuned to the body, attuned to the body. My mind is making sure that my molecules are such that it can do what it needs to do to have the mindal self that my personality needs. And the fact that my mind is dominating my body is going to be very evident when I die. 3 days later, when there isn't mind dominating this collection of molecules, you're going to be able to notice that the collection of molecules doesn't look quite as spiffy as it used to look. Okay?
Liquefied by
this. Okay. Right, see, that's what they're talking about. The fact that I'm this ongoing phenomenon, you know, as I am. My mind is maintaining things so that there can be a mindful self with forms where personality pattern, you know, can express in and through those forms. It's making sure that that's the case. Okay, keep going.
Even spirit beings have form, and these spirit forms, patterns, are real. Even the highest type of spirit personalities have forms, personality presences, in every sense analogous to your intramortal bodies. Nearly all beings encountered in the seven superuniverses are possessed of forms. But there are a few exceptions to this general rule. Thought adjusters are to appear to be without form until after fusion with the surviving souls of their mortal associates. Solitary messengers, inspired Trinity spirits, personal aids of the Infinite Spirit, gravity messengers, transcendental recorders, and certain others are also without discoverable form. But these are typical of the exceptional few. The great majority have bona fide personality forms, forms which are individually characteristic and which are recognizable and personally distinguishable.
Yeah, so, I mean, in the list of beings, you know, remember that they're basically all very transcendent. You know, the only slight exception is a solitary messenger. You know, it has an actual personality like we think of personality, not this very transcendent, super personal, or whatever sort of a personalization. But it's, remember, the big mystery is how they don't have definitive form. And again, think very top down. Don't think so much imagining an outline of a body. Okay, the body is secondary. You know, more and more you're going to know another person on high, mind to mind. You're going to recognize them as the same person you knew before, because you're going to see the forms in their mind. You're going to see the pattern that manifests in and through those forms in their mindful self, and you go, ah, that's the same influence toward eternity as I saw before. That's the same person I saw before. Okay, you'll see in a minute here, they're building towards, you know, really putting the body in its place, that the genuine form that you want to begin to identify with in yourself and in others is the forms in your mind or self that your personality can potentially manifest in and through. All right.
The liaison.
Oh, I just want to, you noticed, I forgot to mention, that parenthetical in that first line, even spirit beings have form, and these spirit forms, and then parenthetically, patterns are real. I mean, you know, just, again, they're reminding you, we're talking technically about patterned form here because we're talking about personalities. So it isn't just form, it's patterned form. So, you know, there's, you know, to say they're real, you know, they're, you know, patterns actually, see, is what's making them real. And not just actualities, they're realities because they're patterned forms. Okay.
The liaison of the cosmic mind and the ministry of the adjutant mind spirits evolve a suitable physical tabernacle for the evolving human being. Likewise, does the Mirantra mind individualize the Mirantra form of all mortal survivors. As the mortal body is personal and characteristic for every human being, so will the Mirantra form be highly individual and adequately characteristic of the creative mind which dominates it. No two Mirantra forms are any more alike than any two human bodies. The Mirantra power supervisor, sponsor, and the attending seraphim provide the undifferentiated Marantxa material wherewith the Marantxa life can begin to work. And after the Marantxa life, it will be found that spirit forms are equally diverse, personal, and characteristic of their respective spirit, mind, and dwellers.
So just to stress again, they keep saying form and form. Do not think the arrangement of the energies, like the spatial shape of my body. Yeah. It's that thing that humans don't recognize. The forms, not the arrangement of the energy. Okay, that's what, you know, like I said, this is...
just an example. What
I mean, again, it's. I mean, I'm just trying to get you to get you to recognize what form is a very difficult thing. I mean, the most brilliant minds that have lived for many centuries haven't done that. So, right, just kind of just recognize that what they're talking about when they're saying the form that you will have, they don't mean the arrangement of your Marantxa energy. They don't mean the figuration. They mean this something that's with that, something that's not directly measurable in an energy sense. Okay, that there's a form. There is an influence that's present within my body. That there's form within me. There's a certain way that the laws of physics are functioning in my body that's unique to some tiny little degree, because my personality is absolutely unique. It's not like, you know, the second law of thermodynamics or the conservation of energy is different in me. No, it's, you know, those things are the same in every, but the forms, what those laws are being told to do within me, because of my absolutely unique personality, is potentially completely different than any other being in the universe of universes. And the more I go up, the more my personality will begin to actually manifest this. You know, the profound thing about you will not be the arrangement of your energy. It will be these forms. It will be what those energies are being told to do within those forms. It's what they're conforming to.
So I had a way of thinking of that.
I mean, like my hand moving, okay? It's, you know, there's no law of physics that demands that my hand go up and down like this right now, okay? But if I examine the details of the physics in my arm and hand and body and everything, there's no mind energy pushing my body around. It's a purely physical energy thing. The question is why? Okay, not how, why is my hand moving? The form is tied to the why. The laws of the physical energy is tied to the how, right?
So I thought about this for a while. One of the things I came up with is that, you know, when they talk about in the Marantxa where we have a lot of more senses, mm-hmm. You get 70 and then you eventually get more than we have. But so that you really become who you are, so that you look, when somebody looks at you, you know, you're known as you are known, you look like who you are. Those traits that who you are visible, or they actually, you know, they take on a recognizable form, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. So I can look at you immediately and kind of tell a whole lot more about you just by looking at you. Different kind of eyes.
Right.
But, you know, you're actually, you know, exuding the spiritual qualities you are, or the generosity, or the lovingness, or blah, 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 because of the fact that you're becoming on the outside who you are on the inside.
Right. I mean, and all that is valid. I mean, especially the higher you go, the higher you go in the Marantxa forms, yeah, the arrangement of your energies will say a lot. Okay? But we're trying to focus on something even more profound in the arrangement of your energies. You know, like you look at the arrangement of, you know, a primary Lennon-index energies, and, you know, he's radiant, you know, okay. You know, those issues are one thing, but more profound is not the arrangement of your energies, it's this form. It's what's behind the arrangement.
But behind, and that's what they're getting at. The form is the pattern, So it's like this thing between pattern and the actual thing that's formed, the thing that's being patterned.
Right. I mean,
the energy of the thing that's
like I said, I mean, we can't get into all of the details of this. I mean, that's why I try to step you through in Reawakening Philosophy is, I mean, is how it is that you understand the relationship between spirit and mind and matter and how this all works and form and pattern and mother deity and all these things are important to the logic of that whole process, how it's all associated, how it is that my mind can make this matter of my arm move like this in front of me. Yep.
Describing like a mind of form, like a conceptual formation from a very spiritual place.
Well, it starts with forms in the mind, and forms in the mind lead to forms in the body. And the higher you go, even the outline of the body, you know, even literally into the arrangement of the body, you know. I have very little control about the shape over the shape of my arm right now, okay? But there's things going on inside my arm, yeah, or the very fact of whether my arm moves or not, right? There are issues, right? Okay.
Okay. On a material world, you think of a body as having a spirit, but we regard the spirit as having a body. The material eyes are truly the windows of the spirit-born soul. The spirit is the architect. The mind is the builder. The body is the material building.
Right, so just the fundamental top-downness of that. Right, that's the point. Spirit through mind to matter. And like we were just saying, the body is the material building. The higher you go, the more that material building, you know, will be arranged to reflect your personality influence up there in spirit, okay? But even now, okay, just fundamentally, you know, start to see yourself as top down, and that, you know, the one kind of key thing in there is the material eyes are truly the windows of the spirit-born soul. Remember, there's a branch of mindal self, seated on your soul right now, a separate self from the one that's thinking about what I'm saying right now. You may not be able to see your soul. Very unlikely in this life that any of us will have any inkling of the existence of our soul. But that doesn't mean the soul can't see you. Yeah, it's making decisions based upon what it sees, and it can even see through your eyes. Okay? You can't see through its insight, but it can see through you. Right? Just remind you, it's literal. That mindal self is seeing through your eyes right now. Okay? That's why, you know, when that mindal self is resurrected, it's like I'm resurrected. Even though my mortal self is not going to be resurrected, the one that's thinking and talking right now is not going to be resurrected. It dies and that's the end of it. How can I feel satisfied with what is going to be resurrected? You know, that Marantia mindal self that's seated on my soul right now, that third self. You know, there's my adjuster self, my mortal self, and then that third self. That other self is going to be resurrected. You know, it is me. You know, it sees through my eyes, it feels through my fingers, it smells through my nostrils, hears through my ears. Okay? Even though I'm completely unaware of its existence.
Okay. Other than to know that it's there.
Yeah, other than, yeah, especially now with the fifth epical revelation, I know it's there. Yeah. And it's pretty mind-boggling to think about there's this other self of making decisions right now that I know nothing of. It's like, I hope those decisions are to my benefit. Well, it's me, you know, they are to my benefit. They're just trying to get you to really, you know, start to see this more top down, you know, and these forms in the mind, be they forms in that Marantia mind of that, the soul's self, or the forms in my agitated mind, those are first and the matter is second. Mind is the builder. The body is the material building.
Physical, spiritual, and mindal energies, as such, and in their purest states, do not fully interact as actuals of the phenomenal universes. On Paradise, the three energies are coordinate. In Havona, coordinated. While in the universe levels of finite activities, there must be encountered all ranges of material, mindal, and spiritual dominance. In non-personal situations of time and space, physical energy seems to predominate, but it also appears that the more nearly spirit-mind function approaches divinity of purpose and supremacy of action, the more nearly does the spirit phase become dominant. That on the ultimate level, spirit-mind may become all but completely dominant. On the absolute level, spirit certainly is dominant. And from there on out, throughout the realms of time and space, wherever a divine spirit reality is present, whenever a real spirit mind is functioning, there always tends to be produced a material or physical counterpart of that spirit reality.
Okay, so a lot of that is pretty straightforward, but just that last part and thinking about our relationship to the earth, okay? The whole point, see, is eventually for the earth to directly manifest what they're talking about there. You want to be able to look at the earth and see that there's a real spirit mind functioning. You can tell by the pattern that's imposed upon the earth. You know, just like the artistry that is an architectural world, okay? You know, it expresses the functioning of real spirit mind. It's artificial, okay? It's an art form of a high functioning mind. And, you know, how does that look like on the Isle of Paradise? Like they say there, like I said, you see at the beginning there, they're talking about how the three energies, you know, don't have any relationship to each other because they're absolutely distinct. But there's something that's bringing them together. Mother, deity, you see the word coordinated, okay, that's Mother Deity. You notice they say that Havona is coordinated. They can understand sort of how it's done. It's, you know, an experiential process. They can understand that it became coordinated or is being maintained in a coordinated fashion. But existentially, you just have the three energies are coordinate. Why? Because there's the infinite mother spirit. Okay, and those three energies are just simply coordinate. So again, that's what they're trying to bring out, you know, and what we're trying to be part of down here in the super universes is this coordinating phenomenon. So if you take delight in cultivating, having a mind that's synchronized with the universal harmony, with the mind of God the Mother, you become part of this coordinating phenomenon in the universe of universes. The first thing that you coordinate is yourself. And then your coordinated self can begin to go out in the outer life and help the outer life to become coordinated. But, you know, you're not going to help with the coordination of the outer life if you aren't coordinated in the inside first. Okay. It doesn't happen magically. You don't just will it. You have to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. All right, why don't you just read the rest of it here.
The spirit is the creative reality. The physical counterpart is the time-space reflection of the spirit reality. The physical repercussion of the creative action of spirit mind. Mind universally dominates matter, even as it is in turn responsive to the ultimate over control of spirit. And with mortal man, only that mind which freely submits itself to the spirit direction can hope to survive the mortal time-space existence as an immortal child of the eternal spirit world of the supreme, the ultimate, and the absolute, the infinite. Presented by a mighty messenger on duty in Nebadon and by the request of Gabriel.
Kind of sounds like that mighty messenger may actually be on the commission, you know, if it's by the request of Gabriel. But just that last bit, you know, the very top down, spirit dominates mind, mind dominates matter. You know, and then what are you synchronizing with? Who are you a child of? You know, it's not a son of. You know who you're a son of. You're a son of the Universal Father. Who are you a child of? The hierarchy of Mother, right? The Supreme, the Ultimate, the Absolute, all the Mother Deity that's going up the hierarchy, you know, all the way up to the Infinite Mother Spirit, the Infinite Made Mind. you know, just to stress it again as a final thought, you know, just one of the key ways to begin to move things forward from the mode they've been in throughout all of human history is to definitively go beyond that starting point religious consciousness of the recognition of will and the relationship of your will to the Father. That's indispensable. That's what starts you. You know, the Father initiates you. But to follow, you know, to take up what follows that initiation, that second consecration, take delight in cultivating. The fifth epical revelation is very much trying to get us to recognize what's next after you have consecrated your will to the perfect will of God the Father. And, you know, what's next is what happens when you go beyond the Father. And most immediately, what that means in you is mind. Mind is what goes beyond the Father. Take delight in cultivating your mind, not just the purity of your will. That's the fifth epical revelation. That's what makes you a cosmic system. That's what puts you in relation to the whole, you know, and connected to others through the individuality of the whole. Energy, mind, and matter. When all is said and done, you see with this section, it's not about atomic cohesion. It's about your mind. It's about the cohesion of your mind. Now, is your mind held together well because it conforms to the cosmos? Take delight in cultivating, having that kind of cohesive mind. All right, let's pause for a moment here.